Hi everyone, it's Kino here. Thanks so much for joining me on Seek Up, the Yoga Inspiration Show. I am so grateful for you and grateful to you for tuning in and sharing this journey with me. I am overwhelmed with how many people come up to me and say that they're really enjoying this type of communication, teaching, and sharing. So thank you so much for being a part of this journey of yoga, this journey of spirituality, this journey of mindfulness, this journey of seeking wisdom. More than anything else, this is meant to support the seeker's journey, meant to support you on the path. If you find this series of teaching really beneficial, the way that you can support this series is to become a member of the Om Stars yoga community and practice. We have decided to make this series free and available to everyone so that no matter where you are in the world, you can get the teachings that will hopefully provide sustenance for the seeker's journey. And for those of you that can become a member and give your support, please know that I appreciate it. And I'll see you on the mat real soon.
Well, thanks for being here, everyone. My name is Monica, and I'm here with Anna. Mm-hmm. And Anna's super special. I've been coming to her studio for like the past 5 or 6 years.
Yes.
And it was just one of the first places I came to teach. So it's such a special place with like such a beautiful community. I always love coming here and just seeing how Anna's holding space for community and how she's running her studio. It's always really impressive and really inspiring. And so I thought it would be really cool to sit down and have a chat. And she's also a very dedicated practitioner. I see her. I met her in Miami. She comes to Miami all the time to practice with her teachers. So she's really dedicated to the practice. So she's a teacher, but makes a lot of time and space to practice and stay connected as a student, which I think is so important as a teacher. Again, if you have any questions, feel free to drop them in the chats at any moment and we'll get to them. So I thought we could start with just Anna telling us a little bit more about your journey. Mm-hmm. How you came into the practice, you know, mm-hmm. when you came into the practice and what your journey up until today has been. I mean, it can be broad strokes.
Yes.
Or if there's something that you think deserves a little bit more attention, you can get a little bit more into it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. First of all, thank you so much for having me on this. And thank you so much for coming to our place almost every year. This is such an honor to have you, Monica. And it's so nice to work with Om Stars, with the mm-hmm. community, with all the nice people out there. And yeah, really happy that this is possible nowadays. Mm. Yeah. So my yoga journey started, the very first yoga class I ever took was when I was maybe 10 or 11.
Whoa.
But it was only in one time event mm-hmm. during a ballet summer camp mm-hmm. that I did. Mm-hmm. And we had like one evening with yoga. And all I could remember, but it stayed with me for a very long time, that this was the best sleep I ever had.
Wow.
Up till that date.
Wow.
I felt like dropped dead, and I had the best sleep ever mm. after that practice. And when I was in the university, you know, maybe some of you guys know that I studied biology. And during this, I had to do a lot of work in the laboratory, which is a lot of times like this. You stand on your feet and you are like crunching your back a little bit, rounding your back. And I had probably the most common thing that people brings to yoga, I had back pain. Mm-hmm. And this mm-hmm. was the reason why I started yoga again, mm-hmm. because I thought, okay, I heard that this is helpful for your back to improve your posture definitely took away my back pain, mm-hmm. but it did this very quickly, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then they were gone. But I stayed with yoga. And I liked it very much. But like 1 or 2 times a week only. It wasn't mm-hmm. a thing like I do it today. It wasn't a regular practice that right. was there like every morning or nothing like that. But I really liked it and I dived deeper into it. First of all, it was Iyengar yoga, which taught me a lot about alignment, body awareness, and how to use the props and how to find a very good technique. And I really liked the still about Iyengar yoga. But after a while, I found out that there is more dynamic yoga, like Vinyasa and Jivamukti. And I always loved dancing and moving around. And I thought, oh, this is such a cool thing. I want to learn more about that. And this is when I started to see other workshops, other teachers. And over time, I found out there are teacher trainings also. They exist. And even though I was one of those girls that thinks I'm going to do a teacher training to deepen my practice and to find a deeper understanding and connection to yoga, I ended up owning a studio, running a studio, and making a living out of it. But it took some years, of course, in between. But when I found it, it never let me go somehow.
So cool. And now your main practice is Ashtanga yoga.
Yes.
So how did you make the transition from, and I know you said you're looking for something more dynamic, which Ashtanga is definitely more dynamic.
Yeah, but I didn't know about Ashtanga back then.
Okay.
I didn't know that it exists. I learned about Ashtanga in my first yoga teacher training because my it was two teachers that were running this training and one of it was an Ashtangi. And I thought what she was telling us about this practice was really cool and I wanted to try, but she wasn't teaching it at that time. It was just her own practice.
Okay.
And I really liked the idea to have a own practice, to have something that I could do on my own without a teacher, or secrets that I can follow without coming up with something on my own.
Right.
And I loved the idea. But I also had stuff about getting injured in Ashtanga or that the only ambitious people do Ashtanga. Of course, I heard also bad news about Ashtanga. And but I wanted to try. And I bumped into my teacher, my old teacher, and I fell in love from day one. I was in his class, and even though I wasn't able to do any of these poses, I knew from minute one, this is my thing.
Nice.
This is totally my thing.
Yeah. What was it about it? Like, other than, you know, I think it's kind of cool how Ashtanga like has built into it this sort of self-practice as part of the method. But what else about it that like drew you in and was like, this is, you connected to it?
In the beginning, it definitely was also the physical aspect because I loved those poses and I love to work with the body and I always looked for a class where I can try Lotus because no one ever taught it to me. It's too dangerous. It's too far beyond what Westerners could do. Yeah. And in those classes, they just had it. Yeah. They just throw it at you. Yeah. You try. Yeah. And I love the idea in Ashtanga yoga that it is something you can try. Everybody can try.
That's true.
Are modifications, but you are allowed to do headstand. You are allowed to do bridge pose. It's not like something that is only for the adults after 30 years of sitting in a cave.
So cool. Yeah.
And I love this idea. So yes, in the beginning, the physical aspect of the practice and the asanas dropped me in because I was curious and I'm still in love with asana.
Yes.
And I think at one point in your Ashtanga journey, you will find out we are all a little addicted to asana, which is
sure. I totally am.
Yes, yes. And I don't think it's a bad thing. To be in love with asana. So that's one part. But I pretty quickly I found out that it has something else in store, that it gives me the opportunity to have my own practice, to step onto the mat, to be with me, to be with my mind, with all my patterns, all my anger and whatnot. my emotions, my feelings, my mind, and also my breath. Mm-hmm. And it's just me on the mat, meeting myself and be with me.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's like you could technically do that with vinyasa.
Of course.
But somehow the method of Ashtanga kind of creates the space and the structure to find that.
It does.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I mean, of course, I was already a vinyasa teacher or almost a vinyasa teacher when I started the Ashtanga practice. And you could also say, come up with your own sequence and do the vinyasa, do it vinyasa style, what you do with Ashtanga. Of course, this is also possible, but it didn't work for me.
Right.
I wanted the Ashtanga sequence and I wanted to follow those crazy rules. That first made no sense to me, but then they made sense. And I really like that about Ashtanga, that it is something only for you.
That's only a really beautiful way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted you also to talk a little bit about community, because just like seeing your life and seeing how you, like just the way you live your life and the way you approach yoga, it's clearly very important to you. In Yoginski, you like do a lot of things to cultivate community. Like every time I come in here, there's always like a group of people outside talking and drinking tea, and it always feels really warm and everybody's so like happy to be there. But then also you make an effort to step outside of this community and touch base with other communities as a student.
Yes.
You come to Miami all the time.
Yeah.
You connect with like the larger community of Ashtanga yoga.
Yes.
So clearly it's really important to you. So maybe talk a little bit about what kind of role it plays in your life as a teacher, as a studio owner, but then also as a student.
Yeah, good question. I found out that this community thing, because I talked about this practice that is only for me. So the opposite is the contrast. I found out that the community is the most important aspect of a studio and of a successful studio and community. When I was in Miami for the first time, when I saw the old Miami Life Center Shala, and saw the community there and the teachers and the students and how they treated us as trainees. And I really was very impressed by this. And I thought, okay, yoga is not only coming to a class and leaving, you know, going to the locker room, say hi and goodbye.
Right.
It's more than that. And how can we integrate this into our community? How can we integrate this into our studio? And I think at the end, not only Ashtanga, but Ashtanga is a very good style of yoga to create this community, because usually people come more often than one time.
Right.
It's not a practice for once a week.
Right.
Usually.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started to integrate more Ashtanga to our schedule, more people came more often. So this created a community and made it more easily to have this sangha, this family of people that like each other and like to be together off the class, beside the class.
Right. Yeah. It's like you're seeing these people maybe more often than you're seeing your friends.
Yes.
So they become a big part of your life.
For sure.
And it's like you see them when you're doing this vulnerable practice of yoga. Mm-hmm. So it's like they see a side of you that maybe people outside these walls don't see.
Mm-hmm.
So as a studio owner and lead teacher here, what would you say is like maybe some good advice to other people trying to start community and build community? I mean, one thing that I'm hearing is find a way to get people to come more often. You know, obviously, like that's easier said than done. It's kind of interesting to think about like building community. Also, it's good for business. You know,
yes, of course.
And like, obviously, that's not our main like
yoga goal
purpose in being, because you're not, you know, you're not going to own a yoga studio because you want to get rich.
Mm-mm.
But you also need to, like, it needs to be successful if it's going to stay afloat. So you do have to think about business a little bit.
You do.
And I think it's great that building community is good for business, but it's also good for the practice.
Mm-hmm.
So what's some other advice that you would have for someone that, you know, wants to build community?
Yeah. I think probably the best advice that I can give someone who wants to establish like a community or a bit broader studio space, do only things that you like yourself.
Oh, that's a good one.
Just do the classes that you like, just be together with teachers that you like, and this will draw people in that are more on your path.
I love that.
You know, and if you stay true to yourself, and if you yourself like to come to your studio, someone else will also do.
Oh, I really like that.
Yeah.
Because then it's not so much of a job to build community. It just becomes more natural.
Yeah. It's more like building a friendship.
If it's forced, it won't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
No. If you just do it, and maybe doing something that you really like means don't do it because someone told you to do something.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Sometimes it needs, you need maybe the energy to say, no, I'm not doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Even though everybody's asking me for it, but it doesn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
I don't feel it because I had like many, many good ideas that people were telling me how to get this bigger.
Oh, interesting.
And I didn't do everything of it.
Okay.
Some of it.
Do you have one example that you wouldn't mind sharing?
For example, do more of like yoga in sports classes.
Okay.
Yoga for runners.
Okay.
Do more yoga for office people.
Right. And you probably could whip out a class for that.
Of course.
But it would be very... No. Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't resonate with me. And I said to myself, yoga is for all this stuff. Yoga is for people that do sport. Yoga is for people that do running. Yoga is for people that sit in offices. It's for everybody. So I don't have to put a label on it.
Mm.
And on the other side of the story, exclude other people that are not runners, that are not sitting in an office, just to create, I don't know, a claim that maybe brings you one or two people more.
Right.
No. And and I always had the same idea. In our studio, we don't have levels. Most studios have like level one or intermediate. And I mean, it means something else in Ashtanga world, but like, you know, beginner classes. And we also have beginner classes. Okay, that being said, we don't have like level one, two, three.
Okay.
Because I don't believe in that.
I
believe
like
that yoga is for everybody.
Yeah.
And there is not an advanced pose. I think every pose can be broken down to a version that anybody can do it. And
like
it's
that.
Your job as a teacher to help find people their modification or their version.
Yeah.
I think this is what Ashtanga is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Looking to it from the outside, sometimes... Yeah, you have the image of only the young and abled and only the very, very attractive and thin and athletic people can do Ashtanga, which is absolutely not true, I think.
Nice.
It's the opposite. It's for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, and something as simple as titling your classes a certain way can have such a big effect on how people show up.
It does.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It kind of takes out this idea that yoga is this progressive physical thing. Mm-hmm. It's something that anybody can get something out of any class.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And if they can't, then you're right. It's the teacher who needs to be able to bring the practice to the students who are present.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And even if you put out something like level two, you will end up in a class with people who think they are level two.
It's interesting.
And then you have to deal with them.
Like, I'm sorry, but
you know, so
yeah. It's also so arbitrary. Like, what is level two?
What
even
is
mean?
Level two? Me.
Yeah.
In the yoga sense of way, it would mean we're just sitting.
Right. It's true. Yeah. Like advanced yoga, what is advanced yoga? Yeah, is it doing these crazy postures or is it being able to sit still for an hour?
Exactly.
You know?
I think this is way harder than doing the asana.
It's so much harder. Totally. Yeah. Cool. So, I mean, and right now, you teach Ashtanga yoga, but you also teach Vinyasa.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I know you have a Mysore program here, and it's like a great way, like going back to what we were saying, to kind of build that sense of community because people are they're practicing Mysore, they're coming often.
Yes.
You know, three times a week, maybe. Mm-hmm. And how have you... Because I know the studio, what I think has been interesting about the studio, it kind of has a really strong Vinyasa program, but also a very strong Ashtanga program, and you kind of are involved in both. How do you like bridge those two communities and those programs? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was interesting because in the beginning, I couldn't find a way to bring those two together. Mm-hmm. And no one who joined my Ashtanga classes would come to the Vinyasa classes and the opposite way.
Ah, interesting, yeah.
So in the beginning, it was like, I had to convince them somehow. And what I did is I invented this class, which we're going to do later on today. It's called Ashtanga Werkstatt, which means Ashtanga Workshop. And it's like a hybrid class. We do the standing sequence and all the sun salutations to warm up the body. And then in between, in the middle of the sequence, we look at maybe the forward folds of the primary series or some of the backbends of the second series. Mm-hmm. We mix it a little bit, and this makes it more interesting for the Vinyasa people who want something new every week. Which I also understand because I have a big heart for people that practice Vinyasa. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're all bad. And this was a real cool way to draw people into the Ashtanga world more. Yeah. To make it more open and to show people, you can, once in your lifetime, you are allowed to do an Ustrasana before you hit the intermediate series. Yeah. It's totally fine.
Right. Totally.
You're not going to die from it.
Yeah. You're still doing yoga.
Yes.
Still yoga. Yeah. And I think, I think you can still practice like the spirit of Ashtanga and bring in the tools of Ashtanga in a class like that. Mm-hmm. So you're already, they're already practicing Ashtanga in a way, and they're like, okay, now you just have to do the sequence. But it's basically Tristana, breath, Drishti, posture.
It is. And it probably helps also that my Vinyasa class is maybe a little bit like an Ashtanga class, because we always do the sun salutations like we do it in Ashtanga. We always do a standing sequence. We always do the same inversion finishing sequence at the end. Mm. So I kind of use the tools that the Ashtanga shows us for the Vinyasa.
Right.
It's not a Vinyasa class that is totally off that frame.
Right.
Which but also exists.
And it's such a good frame. We were speaking about earlier, like, that, you know, the sequencing of Ashtanga is so intelligent and so powerful. Even if you change the middle part a little bit to kind of appeal to a wider audience, like Vinyasa people, it's so good. Like, starting on your feet, starting standing, and then ending with the finishing to wind down.
Absolutely.
And sort of going through, like, a mindful... intelligent sequence in the middle, it really has such a different effect and such a powerful effect. Yeah,
absolutely. I agree 100%. And I think that if you look at the evolution of yoga, even though Ashtanga isn't very old compared to maybe 5,000 years of yoga, I think that Ashtanga was there before Vinyasa. And Vinyasa evolved out of this sequence. So I think it's a good way to always keep in touch with this original sequence that makes so much sense.
That's so true. Even if you do want to practice vinyasa, I love vinyasa.
Yeah.
But it's cool to kind of, be in touch with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
That's also why like having both programs in the studio is so makes so much sense.
Yes.
Yeah, it's nice. Cool. Is there anything else that you kind of want to shed light on about your shala and what's important to you when it comes to having this community and having, you're running a business and you're teaching yoga?
Yeah. One other thing that is very important for me, even though it's harder than creating a well-established community, is that I'm very passionate about opening up the space for other people than white female women, know, and it's hard. It's really hard.
And it can't just be a passive thing of like, oh, of course everyone's welcome. You need to like proactively go out there and make sure they feel welcome.
Exactly. Because I had a conversation with a friend, and we were talking about this, and she said to me, you should really put something on your homepage, or you should really be more active with this. And I said, come on, you know me.
Yeah.
I love diversity, and I want all people to come, no matter if they're German or not, if they look like me or not. And she said, yes, but if you look at your Instagram, what people see is another white, blonde girl performing asanas. Yeah. Yeah. So this is not the information you want to spread out there,
right?
Because you're just one of them.
Right.
You are part of the problem, kind of.
And
this is so true. And I never thought of it that way, because I think, no, everybody that knows me knows I'm against all this.
Right.
I'm
but
against
nobody,
body shaming.
But
how should someone know this, you know? So you have to be proactive on this. You have to say it out loud, and you have to repeat it all the time. And you have to invite people, the bigger bodies, the people of color, the, I don't know, foreigners, and the, whatever kind of human can use some yoga and can practice here. But you have to address them. You have to reach out to them.
Yeah, and clearly communicate it on all of these channels of communication we have these days.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because if you don't, then people will just make assumptions.
Yes, yes, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I try to have this kind of displayed in my teachers, with my teacher community. I try to, to be a little bit more diverse than maybe other studios on that. But talk about it, do it, invite people, and
Nice, beautiful. You do a great job of that.
Thank you. I try. I have a good example in Miami. Because you guys also do this, and on OMSTARS also. Kino, I think, is a very good on that, and it's a role model for that, even though she is also one of those ladies. Beautiful, able body, and advanced asana practice, and I bet most people are drawn in by that. But the first time I met Kino, I also was in love with the asana practice that she presents, of course, and by her videos. But the moment she said a word, I knew, okay, no, this is not what she is about.
Yeah.
She's so much more. And this practice is so deep in her. And she comes from pure love, I think. And this is, I think, her greatest gift. And she's doing this for the right reasons.
Yeah, she is. She is. I mean, that's why I became a part of OMSARS early on, because I just saw her vision and I was like, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think she always, for all of us, and of course also for the members on OMSTARS, she will come up with something new. She will have the idea of how to progress, how to evolve yoga, how to make this even better and more accessible for everybody.
Yes, for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think back to what you're saying, it comes from this connection to the practice and this love and that kind of propels to want to like create a platform for everyone and like elevate everyone, no matter what you look like, no matter how you're coming to the practice, what you're capable of doing physically, because it's not about that, you know?
No.
And it's, so it's important to draw everybody's attention to what it is about. It's about this like sincere desire to connect with each other and be just better people.
Absolutely.
To ourselves, to each other.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I see some questions.
Okay.
I'm gonna crawl over to the chat.
Yes. And I can maybe repeat them.
Yes. Yeah. So we have like clear audio.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, Anna's in Stuttgart. Did I say that right? Did I say that like a German?
Yes, absolutely. Germany. Perfect. Stuttgart, southern Germany. Yes, that's where I reside. Yeah.
So if you're ever in town, Joginski, look it up.
Okay.
What inspired you to open up your studio?
Yeah, that's a good one.
So
finally, after the teacher training, I found out I maybe didn't do it only to deepen my practice. I maybe have the vision of teaching. And I started teaching and I found out, okay, maybe I have to do this on my own. Maybe I have to open up my own space. And I was lucky enough to have the opportunity for a short amount of time in our small shala over there to try it for a year. And this felt very comfortable because I thought, oh wow, 1 year, if it doesn't click, okay, I can let it go easily. And if it spreads out, nice. And 8 years later, we're here with 3 shalas, 50 classes a week. And so it clicked and it really worked. But yoga inspired me, I guess, the yoga path, and sharing this passion for yoga with other people was my vision, kind of.
And, you know, like, I think it's a lot about, like, it kind of connects back to what you were saying before, to not force anything and to not do anything that you don't like. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't force this shala growth.
Mm-mm.
And you weren't even, I feel like you weren't even expecting it.
No.
You're just like, I just want one shala. And then there was like no space. So you're like, oh, I guess we have to get another shala.
Yeah.
But they might kick us out soon. So I don't really know if this is, you know, and you just kind of kept like trusting and throwing yourself into. So I think, like, that's a really cool thing to point our attention to, is that you can't like force it if it's like not something that you're resonating with, or if it's not something that you're like actually are into, you know, just because of some expectation of like, of having a big successful yoga studio, you know, like allowing it to like naturally grow into what it's supposed to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think this is also something that Ashtanga tells us, you know, or teaches us. Yeah, to not force the pose, it'll come.
Yeah.
Just you have to let go a little bit of the image, you doing this fantastic thing. It'll come. If it's there, maybe it's there for you, and then it will come.
Yeah, beautiful. Another great question. What keeps you drive for your community? So I guess, you know, what keeps you like working and putting effort for your community?
Yeah, as Monica said, I have my own islands of inspiration. And this is meeting up with my teachers, meeting up with the community in Miami or with the broader Ashtanga community around the world. And I love to, to create space during the year for my own practice, where I'm just a student, practice with Kino or with Tim or some other teachers. Last year and the year before was a little bit with David Swenson, which I really enjoyed also. So, to create space for my own practice really helps me to be inspired for my studio and the rest of the community. Stay connected, always be a student. And this really helps me.
Right.
Not you burn out as a teacher.
You burn out if you don't have a teacher, or if you don't have your practice on your own. This is not meant forever. Yeah.
What was the biggest flop or learning in your teaching career so far?
That's also a good one.
Yeah.
What was the biggest learning? Yeah, maybe I had to learn, because I have a great passion for this yoga and I have a huge passion for Ashtanga, that maybe not everybody likes it as much as I do. And sometimes people don't catch that virus, even though you think, oh, it should be so good for you. But then you have to let go.
I often have to remember that, you know, not everybody's gonna get into this.
Yes. Yes.
And that's okay.
That's totally fine.
Yeah. So how do you hold space for students like that?
I try to keep it up with Patanjali and show the loving kindness to everybody, even though they show up 4 times a week or just 4 times a year. And I try to, also a little tip for people that are maybe thinking about opening a studio. I try to learn all the names. And I try to know some stories about people, being interested in them, what they are doing, where they're coming from, why they're here. Maybe knowing about injuries or other stories about the body. And this helps to see people not only as clients, but students, as humans, as other people with stories, with emotions, with everything. And this helps.
Nice. Any other questions? If you guys wanted to drop in the chat. I love what Lena just echoed, something that you said, that I love that you said that yoga is for everybody, and it is the job of the teacher to make it accessible for everybody, period.
Yeah.
That's worth mentioning again. It's so true. Is there a way that you particularly like to hold the Mysore space to bring that across?
Yes, I'm in my Mysore space. I'm always open for modifications, and I am always hoping to help finding people their modifications. But I'm not the greatest fan of using props. So I will always encourage people to look, do I really need this prop? Yeah. Or is this prop maybe holding me back from something? Also, you know?
Right, and that's just a useful line of questioning to just get to know yourself a little better.
It is.
Whether you end up with the conclusion like, yes, it's a good idea to use the prop, or no, it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
Just the process of asking yourself.
Yeah,
you can
exactly.
learn a lot.
Exactly, yeah, and I like to provoke that thought in people.
Cool.
Are you using this because of this or that reason, you know? Yeah. And I also think, and that's what I tell my teachers, or if you're joining a teacher training with me, I will tell you that if you have students, why do you give them props? Will you add them? Because then the pose wouldn't look as miserable to you.
Oh, interesting.
You know, to flip it around.
Yeah.
Is it because the student really needs it?
Right.
And everything else would be like maybe injure them or, or is it just, it looks a little bit crappy because the hand is not on the floor yet. Yeah. But maybe that's the way to get to the floor.
Yeah.
To look a little crappy.
Yeah.
Because I think we all look a little crappy in our asana practice at one point, and that's totally fine.
Right.
It's what I love about Ashtanga. It's not, it doesn't have to look beautiful.
Right.
You just have to do it.
Yeah.
So this is the way I try to set up the Mysore space. So I'm totally up to modifications and to living it, yeah, if somebody comes and says, oh, I just want to do sun salutations and standing today, I don't feel for anything else. Right. And yeah, sure, so nice that you came. Yeah. Hop onto the mat and just do it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I also encourage to,
yeah,
to question your modification.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. And it's like, you're so, like, I just want to echo something you said, that mm-hmm. doesn't have to be beautiful. You just do it,
mm-hmm.
whatever it looks like.
Exactly.
The point isn't to make it look beautiful, because then you're drawing the attention away from the internal form and the internal experience.
Yes.
And like, you also brought up a really good point of, do you want it to look beautiful as a teacher?
Exactly.
Because it makes you feel like a better teacher.
Exactly.
And then it's not about you. It's about the student.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Sometimes I think that there are some teachers maybe out there that give people props just because they don't want to look at the miserable pose, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just more about the teacher at that point.
Yeah.
And like what will really serve the student the most in this moment.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, just, yeah. okay. I mm-hmm. When did you get your degree in biology? Was that before or after discovering yoga? You touched it on.
Yes. Okay. I started yoga during the university. And I hate to say it, but it's more than 20 years ago. And I started my, and I had my, yeah, my, no, let's say, this is good. Okay, numbers now, remembering numbers. I had my degree in biology, and I also did the, the PhD. I made the doctor, and I ended in 2003, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Is this correct? 2003 or 4. And I did my first teacher training in 2011. So yeah. There's time in between.
Okay. And also, fun fact, at one point in between, I'm going to ask her for some dates too, Anna was a DJ.
She
was
correct.
A really cool... popular DJ in Stuttgart, which I think is like the coolest thing I know about her. So when was that?
I started it before I started to go to the university.
Okay.
And I used it all the time to have my money.
Mm.
So I did it.
Okay.
During my first job as a biologist, because it was so not well paid. Uh-huh. And I still had to, still had to DJ. And then after the doctor's degree, I found out, maybe I don't want to live like a lab rat.
Mm.
60 hours in the lab per
right.
week. Maybe I don't want to do this for a poor salary and
okay.
for, yeah.
Yeah.
For no fame and no, just pain.
Yeah.
And I thought of, the music career is going so good, and I'm having so much fun, and this is so, it fills my heart.
Yeah.
That I decided to try it.
Ah.
Yeah. And I said, okay, let's try it half a year.
Okay.
And if it annoys you, you can still go back to biology,
okay.
no problem, after 6 months.
Like, give it a real chance.
Give it a chance
okay.
to just do that.
Mm.
What happens then?
It worked out.
It worked out.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, let Anna's path be a lesson that you can change paths at any moment, because she went from
I did.
DJ to biologist. To yoga teacher, to studio owner.
Yes.
Now I'm kind of like, what comes next?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
That's amazing.
I took it serious with the, more than one lives.
Yeah. And you like really went into each, because you didn't just go to school for biology, you got your PhD.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, like you weren't just a yoga teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You opened up a studio and built a whole community.
Yeah.
So like every life you've had, you've like really gone all in.
Yeah. I think that's my pitta.
Yeah.
I have a lot of fire in me.
Yeah.
And once I got hooked, I'm really there.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't half-ass it.
No.
It's for better or for worse.
Yeah.
For better.
Yeah.
It's working out.
Yeah. But it's also my Achilles tendon. So sometimes this has thrown me off in life.
Yeah.
Because I, when I have fire for something, it's easy to burn myself also.
I mean, in like going back to the Ashtanga practice, it'll really be a mirror for you when you are doing it too much.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of people warned me because they were saying, oh, you're the ambitious type, which I am. So Ashtanga is not good for you because it's not good for ambitious people.
Right.
But to be honest with you, it is what healed my ambition.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful.
It totally
Because it showed you.
It showed you. It mirrored me what I'm doing in my life all the time when I'm like trying to hit walls and go through and not seeing my boundaries.
Right.
And then I saw, okay, I have this fire and I can use it to my benefit. And this practice uses this it to my benefit.
It's not bad.
It's not good. Hurting me.
So then you saw, did you really see a big change in your life outside of Ashtanga once you became more aware?
Definitely.
Fire?
Yes. Cool. I wouldn't say it's only the Ashtanga. I would say it's the yoga in general.
Okay.
But the Ashtanga works for me personally, perfect.
Yeah.
But the yoga path showed me, I don't have to, I don't have to be that hard on me. I easy was.
I was
totally that type. Yeah. Like, come on, you can do anything you want.
Yeah. And in what ways did Ashtanga show you, okay, you're pushing too hard?
Yeah, maybe lucky I'm not, I never got injured that bad.
Okay.
But of course,
yeah,
I got my bruises and
your body will tell you.
My pain. Yes, yes, yes. So the body told me, and also my mind. Because several times I had this experience where I wanted a pose very bad. And it totally was in my mind, in my heart, and everywhere. And it never showed up. But when I let it go, it comes.
It's like magic.
When you soften more, then you open up to the pose opens up to you, whatever it is.
Beautiful. And once I've had that experience too.
I think we all cross it at some point.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, it's like such an obvious lesson. You can't even, you can't not see it.
That's true.
Okay. This is more just a comment, but I think it's really nice. Anna's quarter primary class on Home Stars, they're great for me getting back into Ashtanga after a long hiatus. Awesome. Yeah. I heard, so Anna teaches a quarter primary on Home Stars, and it's, you know, it's just quarter of the primary series, so it's a great way if you want need to like ease back into the practice, or you want to have like a lighter practice. But it's still like, it's still a practice.
It's still a practice.
Primary series is already live.
So sweat and soreness is included. But I also try to give modifications here and there. I'm not breaking down poses. I'm not stopping the practice in the middle, but I try to be as efficient as enough to help people finding maybe modifications for their practice.
Yeah, beautiful.
Also, using blocks is allowed.
It's allowed.
It's like, totally allowed.
Anna doesn't let you use blocks.
No.
So the same student says, "An Ashtanga yoga practitioner at heart. The first class that she took was 23 years ago, and she could totally sense Anna's authentic love for the practice.
Oh,
that's so obvious.
Thank you.
It's like undeniable."
Thank you.
Which makes classes with her, I'm sure, enjoyable. Marija wants to know if your Mysore classes are also available online.
Yes, they are.
Ah, nice.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So looking for a European time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're all over the schedule is all over.
The schedule is a little bit all over, but you will find out if you look at our website. And yes, my two Mysore classes a week and all the other Mysore classes here in the studio are also online. I really have a big heart for the online community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, me too, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
it's great. It's like, you know, a lot of times when I tell people I teach online and I'm connected to that community, like, oh, but that's not like, it doesn't compare to being in person. It's so not, I'm like,
It's not the real yoga.
Yeah, it's not real because you're not doing it in person. And I'm always, you know, like I feel like I need to like defend the online teaching mm-hmm. scene because it's still like such a beautiful way to connect with people. Like totally. I feel like the community, like connecting the community, it's like for real. Like I feel like we really are connected. And it makes so many things about connecting to community more accessible.
Absolutely.
You know, not everybody can go to a yoga studio every single day.
Correct.
For whatever reason, because of mm-hmm. lifestyle, because mm-hmm. of there's no community where you live, mm-hmm. or there's not a teacher that you resonate with. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important to find a teacher that you click with. And maybe the teachers in your city, you just don't have that connection. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's financial, like teaching, mm-hmm. you know, online is, mm-hmm. we can make it a little bit cheaper.
Yes.
So, it's just, there's like a million reasons why online
yes.
works. And,
yes.
you know, it's like kind of COVID kind of like brought that to light, which is really cool.
Totally, totally. That's mm-hmm. what I, maybe one of the good things that the pandemic brought to us.
Yeah.
Because the technique was there already,
yeah.
but we didn't use it.
Yeah. No one considered it as an
no.
actual option.
No,
yeah.
no one would.
Yeah.
But I think with the online thing, it's the same. Like I said before, if you as a teacher, it's your job to make it work.
Mm.
If someone shows up online, you have to be for them,
right.
there for you, for them. And you have to help them find their practice in
yeah.
their life with all the cats and babies around.
Yeah.
It's your mm-hmm. job.
Yeah, as a yoga teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So Claire just kind of echoed what we were saying, that she's grateful for the accessibility of online classes.
Mm-hmm.
She can't drive. That's another reason.
Yeah.
So also, she has at least 7 studios, and also nobody teaches Ashtanga.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
So maybe there's studios, but the mm-hmm. classes you want aren't there.
Yes.
You know, so you have a lot
yes.
more options online, which is... And then, you know, I always kind of end, like, it's also important when you can to... you know, touch base with teachers in person.
Of course.
But it doesn't have to be on a daily basis.
No,
you know?
No. I think this is another aspect of making yoga accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. How
right.
you make your shala accessible.
Right. It's not just accessibility in body types.
No.
It's accessibility in lifestyle, mm-hmm. in time, in financial, you know, in financial mm-hmm. accessibility. There's
yes.
so many, accessibility is such a broad term.
Yeah.
And we can make the practice accessible in a lot of different ways,
mm-hmm.
not just by saying all body, because I think accessibility is kind of like connected to like body types.
Yeah, body image, yeah.
Body
mm-hmm.
image, but
mm-hmm.
it's so much broader than that.
Definitely.
And as a teacher, like you keep saying, it's the
mm-hmm.
teacher's responsibility to be tuned into that
mm-hmm.
and make it accessible to the students that are kind of showing up
yes.
wanting to learn.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
So nice.
Yeah.
Let me see. Yeah. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that, Kara. That's really nice.
Yeah. Thank you. Awesome.
Oh, thank you, Jessica. Someday we'll meet in person.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
This would be awesome. Monica is here during the weekend, but I don't know if you guys at home have time to come. Some of you do, I know.
Yeah, it's such a great, like, every teacher I connect with that's on Om Swords, we always end up talking about how awesome the
mm-hmm.
community is.
Yes.
The students.
And absolutely.
There's so many, like, recurring students who show up to the live classes, which is really,
yeah.
it's so sweet to just see, like, people coming back and, like, continuing the consistency.
Absolutely.
Really awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't see any other. If I'm missing a question, let me know. There's another question here. Were you teaching Mysore classes from the beginning?
No. No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
First, I started with vinyasa and just one-on-one sessions. Because since I have an interest for the body and the medical aspects of yoga, I also did a teacher training in yoga therapy. And I started, do a lot of one-on-one sessions with people who had like an injury
mm-hmm.
or come back from a surgery or something like that
oh,
to
nice.
Build up back the practice. And this is how I started. And then I integrated more classes into the schedule. And I had a Ashtanga leg class Mm-hmm. This was the first that I, okay. I started with that.
Okay.
And the Mysore was many years after.
Okay.
Yeah. Because this, you have to have a steady crowd of people. Mm-hmm. And also, I wasn't ready in the beginning. I was just, I wasn't ready for a Mysore room. It's, I'm still, I know there are rules for Mysore teachers. Some of them I don't, how do you say, I don't hit. But I think after so many years of experience and of my own practice, mm-hmm. it's okay to build this.
Yes.
Yeah. And to do this. But don't start it right away, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it takes so many different skills coming together and experience to hold space.
Absolutely.
You know, just, and you know, just take a moment to give credit to all the Mysore teachers out there. It's a lot. It's hard to hold space. And I think you're more than qualified and that you have the experience and you hold the space beautifully. But it's not to be taken lightly, for sure.
No.
Yeah.
It's nothing that you, just throw on the schedule. Mm. No.
Right.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm not sure if someone was asking that because for personal, but it takes experience and learning to work with different types of people because absolutely. So much comes up in that room.
Absolutely. And it's a really special kind of yoga. Mm. I think it's the most beautiful aspect of the practice, the Mysore room. I really love it. I love to practice in a Mysore room and I love to be as a teacher in a Mysore room. But it is a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot more than teaching a lat class or a vinyasa class.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Right.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so
and
much.
For everybody who's going to watch the recording later, thanks for listening. Yeah. Thank you, Anna, so
thank
much.
Thank you, Monica.
I love you.
Everybody. I love you, too.
Just find teachers that resonate, community that resonates, and the practice is just so much more fun.
It is. Period.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Hey there, it's Kino here. I just wanted to thank you for tuning in to my podcast. Your support and your time and your attention really mean a lot to me. If you're enjoying this podcast series, you can find the full-length videos on my online channel, Omstars. And that's at www.omstars.com. You can redeem a 14-day free trial and get access to our full library of over 3,000 classes and also practice yoga with me online. I'd also love to see you in class sometime, so you can find my full live in-person teaching schedule on my website, which is kinoyoga.com. And if you haven't checked out my books, I'd absolutely be honored if you'd check those out. You can find those available at any online bookseller. The Yoga Inspiration Podcast is designed to keep you inspired to get on the mat. And I hope you're leaving each episode with a little glimmer and spark of the spirit, which is the true heart of the yoga method. Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be filled with love. Namaste.